From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. All this week, we've been hearing what it's like being Latino in Iowa from Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard. This hour, we top off the series with a discussion about the pull many Iowa Latinos feel between the need to assimilate into American culture and the desire to hold on to their heritage. Rob Dillard will join us. Also, Joanne Mackey, Executive Director of Latino Resources, Juan Pena of New Life Furniture in Des Moines, and Nancy Gardner, Principal of West Liberty Elementary School, a school with the only dual language program in the state. Tell us about your experience being Latino in Iowa after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and all this week we've been hearing and enjoying what it's like being Latino in Iowa from Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard. Today we top off that series with a discussion about the pull many Iowa Latinos feel between the need to assimilate into American culture and the desire to hold on to their heritage. It's no secret that in this land of immigrants, each succeeding generation tends to absorb more of their adopted culture. So we'll talk about which traditions Latino parents want to see their children embrace and how communities can help residents strike a balance. Joining us for the first few minutes, Iowa Public Radio's own Rob Dillard. Rob, welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning, Ben.
Good morning. It's been tremendous listening to your work here on this series this week. It really opened my eyes. I can only believe many others' eyes to the many facets of Latino culture and work flourishing in our state. Congratulations on that. And for listeners who haven't heard all of the reports, you can hear them in our Being Latino in Iowa series at iowapublicradio.org. Rob, this is the first in a number of series, Being in Iowa series. Explain a little bit to us why Iowa Public Radio is doing this series.
Well, our news director, Jonathan All, has long wanted to develop a series that would highlight diversity in the state. And as I sat down with him and we brainstormed this concept, we decided we didn't want it to just be about racial diversity, even though that's a big part of multiculturalism in the state. We wanted to bring in other subgroups that make up the rich fabric of Iowa. So in the coming weeks and months, we'll focus on military veterans. We'll explore some different religious groups. Of course, we'll look at some other members of ethnic minorities in the state. But I wanted to start with the Latino community because it is our fastest growing minority group in the state. We looked at the 2010 census figures for Iowa, and it shows that 5% of the state's population is now Latino. That's 152,000 members of the Iowa population. And they project by the year 2040, 30 years from now, Latinos will make up 11% of Iowa's population. That numbering more than 400,000 people in the state. So it's a major part of the fabric of Iowa.
For this series, you have really immersed yourself in a number of different settings in Latino communities across Iowa. What have you learned in your reporting?
It's been a fabulous experience going to small town Iowa, going out to a horse ranch here in Des Moines, listening in on some Spanish language media sources, meeting a young woman who celebrated her quinceañera recently. It taught me some traditions of Latino culture that I was unfamiliar with. And what I learned by going into these towns and meeting these people is how important community and family is. These parents are so attached and in love with their children that they are willing to go to great expense to make sure that they have, in many cases, experiences they did not have in their native countries. And they're holding on to those traditions in, I think, beautiful ways.
Mm-hmm. And that's precisely the struggle that we're looking at here, this wanting to have the really great things that are offered here in the United States to immigrant communities, but also holding on to what makes them who they are in terms of their origins as well.
It was interesting for me to go to, I was in Denison, Western Iowa, met a newspaper editor and publisher there, who actually is a one-woman shop for this La Prensa newspaper in Denison. And she showed me around and introduced me to almost everyone in town because she knew everyone in the small
right.
town.
Right. I heard that report. This is the woman who does everything at the newspaper. I couldn't believe that was one person doing all of that.
She's a fabulous energy source and very connected to Denison and Carroll. She actually lives in Carroll, just up the road from Denison. And that whole Western Iowa Latino community, she's very familiar with. Same thing at the radio station here in Des Moines. I went out and spoke with the general manager and listened into some of the music playing. Again, very connected to the Latino community in central Iowa.
As I said, Rob Dillard, this series has really opened my eyes to a lot of the flourishing Latino culture in the state. I had not realized. It made me, and I can only believe others, want to get out and interact, go to these communities, go to Denison, go to West Liberty to experience it. I imagine the same effect it had on you.
I know you're going to be bringing Joanne into the conversation later, but a good starting point is to go to the Latino Festival. And I think and there's other festivals around the Midwest. It really is a wonderful way to be introduced to the different styles of culture, different foods, all of that.
Rob Dillard, thank you so much for joining us and for this tremendous series this week. And Rob, thanks for joining us here this afternoon.
All right, Ben. Thanks.
Rob Dillard's reports can be heard on Iowa Public Radio by going to iowapublicradio.org. Listen to them online as streaming audio. You can also download them as podcasts. Talking about being Latino in Iowa, are you Latino in Iowa? How has your family struck this balance between American and Latino culture? And what do you think? Tell us your story. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. What have been the challenges? What have been the surprises, the things that you've celebrated most in a new life here in Iowa as a Latino? 1-866-780-9100. We're also on Facebook and Twitter. Give us a tweet at IPR Talk. For the rest of this hour, we have a number of other guests who will be joining us from our Des Moines studio. Joanne Mackey is joining us, Executive Director of Latino Resources. That's an umbrella organization for the Iowa Latino Heritage Festival in Des Moines. Joanne, welcome to our program.
Thank you for having me.
And with Joanne in the studios in Des Moines, Juan Pina, the owner and operator of New Life Furniture in Des Moines. Juan, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
We heard all about you as a Charos in Rob's feature that was aired this morning, and we'll talk about some other facets as well. Also joining us by phone, the director of the Iowa Center for Immigrant Leadership and Integration at the University of Northern Iowa, Mark Gray. Welcome back to our program.
Good afternoon.
Nancy Gardner is with us as well, the principal of West Liberty Elementary School, a school with the only dual language program in the state. That's in a district where more than half the population is Latino. Nancy Gardner, welcome to you as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me talk to Joanne Mackey and Juan Pina, first of all. Joanne, you are a Latina. Tell us about your experience as a Latina woman coming to Iowa. How long ago was that?
That was in mid-'80s, and I am third-generation Latina. Was born here, raised here, schooled here. And I'm very proud of being an American first, but I'm very proud of my heritage also. And doing the festival in Iowa when I came here, I got here because of my work. I got a transfer here, and I used to be with the hotel industry. And when I arrived, I looked around and I thought, wow, where's the color? There was no color here. Yeah. And so
skin color.
Yeah. And I was really shocked, and I started referring to Iowa as a lily white Iowa. Mm-hmm. And I started noticing the changes through the years, and it's a beautiful change because I tell my daughters, I go to Walmart or I go to any store or the malls or wherever. And it's wonderful to turn a corner and hear a language and turn another corner and hear another language. And I think it's beautiful, and I think it's very good for Iowa to have this diversity.
Tell us a little bit more about what anyone can experience at the Iowa Latino Heritage Festival.
Well, we celebrate the 22 Latin American countries, It is now ranked the largest ethnic festival in the state of Iowa. It continues to grow every year. We're going back. We were invited by the Downtown Alliance to return to the downtown bridges. And so we're going back this year, and our dates are September 17th and 18th. And we should have great attendance. And we have lots of things. We have lots. People that come to our festival will not be disappointed. We have entertainment all day long. We have different workshops. We have the exhibit of the 22 Latin American countries. People find out after the festival, I get so many remarks from people saying, wow, I had no idea we had people from Belize or people from Chile or people. They're just surprised. And so it's a enlightening event for people.
Juan Pena, you are the owner and operator of New Life Furniture in Des Moines, a Latino, and you are one of the Charles that we heard profiled in Rob Dillard's piece today. It will also be aired on All Things Considered this afternoon. Your daughter is the one profiled in the Quinceañera piece yesterday. You are also a businessman, as we heard. What would you say have been some of the biggest challenges for you as a father coming to Iowa and working as a businessman, as a Latino?
Well, the biggest was I think the biggest one was the weather, you know. But
where did you grow up?
I grew up, well, half of my life it's in Mexico. I moved to the States about 18 years to California, and I was there for like 20 years. And then I moved about 4 years ago to Des Moines. And I mean, it's been several challenges, you know, with starting a business from zero. You know, showing people we can do things right too, and we're really proud to offer the product as you know, handcrafted furniture, and you know, something you don't see much anymore in these days.
Mm-hmm. But the Iowa winters have been a challenge.
Yeah.
It sounds
that
like.
Was the first I guess the first one was the worst in Iowa, so we got very lucky to get one of the worst in the last I guess 30, 40 years. But other than that, you know, I really like Des Moines, Iowa. It's a really a small city compared to L.A. That's where, you know, I was 20 years. And I love it. It's just, you know, you get both of the feelings, like, you know, country. Rob visited us on our farm, and we have horses. So I'm only 5 minutes to the city, to the farm. You know, and I love it. It's something in California was really hard to do.
Mm-hmm. Mark Gray is director of the Iowa Center for Immigrant Leadership, joining us by phone, and integration at the University of Northern Iowa. You've heard Juan talk a little bit about, talk more generally about the biggest hurdles that immigrants face, Latinos face when they adapt to American culture.
Yeah, well, yeah, and good afternoon, and thanks again for inviting me, and congratulations to Rob for a wonderful series. Yeah, it's been interesting to see how the transition for Latinos into the state has kind of evolved over the last, well, now 16, 17 years or so. You know, we had very relatively few Latinos in the state in the early 90s, and then, of course, that population grew very quickly. I think a couple of things to kind of bounce off what Juan said. You know, we saw a lot of the initial arrivals of Latinos into Iowa starting in the early to mid-90s, where folks like Juan, who actually were living some other place in the United States, like a California or Texas, and then chose to become what we call secondary migrants, that is, to move to Nebraska, Kansas, or to a place like Iowa. But slowly but surely, what happened through the mid-90s and on through the latter part of that decade, Iowa became a primary destination state for the Mexican migrants, and then, of course, migrants from Central America. So in other words, they were not even bothering to go to California. They were coming straight to Iowa. And that, of course, you know, led to some interesting challenges for them, because they were, as they were leaving their home cultures and their home countries and coming straight to Iowa, they didn't have that intermediate step that folks like Juan had, where they came to the United States, you know, were able to ease into the culture, you know, learn more about the language and the expectations, and you know, then they're arriving. They may leave their home in central Mexico and within 2 or 3 weeks find themselves in Perry or Denison, relatively small town. Juan mentioned the weather, but, of course, you had all these other very serious challenges in terms of language, cultural expectations. How do the newcomers interact with established white institutions like hospitals and schools? And what we've seen over the years, of course, is that in a lot of towns profiled by Rob, like Denison and Perry and others, what we've seen is a very slow and gradual transition where those communities have worked in to greater degrees with the newcomers in a form of mutual accommodation where the Latinos, in many respects, didn't have to completely stop being who they were. But then the town reached out enough and adjusted its own institutions in order to accommodate those folks. And we're actually working in communities now, interestingly, where, you know, this was a very, very big deal in the 1990s. And in some places we work, it's kind of old news.
Mm-hmm. And there is no better example of a community reaching out and adapting also in its institutions than the West Liberty School District. Nancy Gardner, principal of West Liberty Elementary School, is with us. Tell us about your experience as a principal of a school where more than 50% of your students are Spanish speakers.
Okay. Yes, we have a high number of Spanish speakers in our school district, and it was back in 13 years ago where we first started our dual language program, and the intent was, of course, to focus on our Spanish-speaking population to allow them to acquire English and to become assimilated into the culture here. But then we brought in our native English speakers so that it is truly a dual language, two-way immersion program. So both sets of students are together in the classroom receiving half of their instruction in Spanish and half of their instruction in English. And as the kids go through the grade levels, they are becoming not only bilingual, but they're becoming biliterate, meaning they're able to read and write in both languages. And then we have a cultural aspect because we want this to be added bilingualism. We're not asking any group to give up their culture, to give up their language. So it's truly a win-win situation.
And if you're Latino, you can also opt out of this. You could get English-only interaction as well, couldn't you?
Correct. Mm-hmm. It is a program within the school, so it's definitely parent choice. And we have both English-speaking parents and Spanish-speaking parents who prefer the English-only option, but we do have quite a number of people that prefer our dual-language program.
Mm-hmm. In instituting this dual-language program, which has been around for some time now, did you have how much resistance have you encountered? Some might say, well, it sort of slows down assimilation.
At the beginning, and the program first was implemented in grades pre-K and kindergarten back in 1998, and so each year we've added an additional grade level, so that this year we actually have our very first group graduating from 12th grade. We have seniors graduating from the dual language program that have been with us all these years. And at the beginning, there might have been a few people that were a little resistant to the program, thinking that it was going to be mandatory. And once everyone was informed, it's a voluntary program, and it's certainly a choice whether or not mm-hmm. someone would want to be involved with it.
You say your first graduating class, the first class to go all the way through your schools under this dual language program. So take that person. What advantages does that person have now going out into the workplace to live and work in Iowa or elsewhere in the United States?
Well, what I like to say is a quote that a parent gave me when she first enrolled her child when he was in first grade. And she said, "For every opportunity, every door that will open to my child, there will be two doors open because he will be bilingual." And it does just add I feel it makes our students world citizens so that they're able to take advantage of all the opportunities out there.
Mark Gray, when you hear Nancy Gardner talk about this dual language program and the way the community of West Liberty has really adapted to the influx of immigrants, Latino immigrants there, how many other communities in Iowa fall into this category?
Well, I think you have a very broad range of responses. Certainly the dual language program that you find at West Liberty is an excellent example of a very proactive form of accommodation that works for both the Latino and the established resident kids. But what we see across the state, of course, is that we like to say that towns are like a people. They have personalities. And so they respond to influxes of immigrants and refugees in slightly different ways. And people always ask me, well, what's the model town? What's the model town? And actually, there isn't a model town, but there are model institutions and how they've responded. So, for example, we could point to, you know, some excellent things that they've done in the healthcare sector in the Storm Lake. We can talk about programs like, you know, the dual language program in West Liberty. And, of course, there are dozens and dozens of responses like that. There is no one-size-fits-all model, even though there's a general perception that that must be the case. It simply is not. Every community has responded differently. And the immigrants and refugees who have moved into these communities have sometimes responded in different ways. So you can have regional differences in the sources of the Latino newcomers who may respond to their new environments in very different ways.
Okay. You mentioned the word proactive. Why is it so important to be communities to be proactive? What's the alternative? What are the consequences?
Well, one thing that we saw in the 90s from in a handful of communities is instead of embracing the newcomers as an opportunity, they were very reactive. This is a problem. It's something that we have to deal with, something that we have to address. And in general, the towns that embrace these changes said, you know, they're going to be up. Let's be upfront about the challenges. You know, let's not just say this is all going to be a cakewalk. Okay, and let's embrace the challenges, but also understand that over the long term, our community is going to be much better off having these people here than not having them here. And the towns like Marshalltown have done a beautiful job with that, where they said, okay, we know this will be difficult in the beginning, but you know, these people are revitalizing our local economy. They're revitalizing our school system. They're revitalizing our housing markets. But then I've worked in a handful of communities where even 10 years into the process, they were still waiting for it to go away. So I think it's a broad range of responses. I and a lot of other folks in the business have become absolutely convinced that, you know, making this work is critical to the long-term social and economic health of our state.
Okay. Before we have to take a short break in just a moment, but Juan Pena there, as someone who grew up in Mexico, immigrated to California, then to Iowa, hearing about that language program, how much of a struggle to adapt did language play a part in there?
It's hard at the beginning. It's, you just come to a whole new different world. But once you discover that world and take advantage of that, it's just endless, you know. I mean, I remember when I first got to the States, I mean, I didn't know any English at all. Excuse me. And once I start learning the language, I see the old opportunity was endless. I mean, I just kept growing and getting more opportunities. And as now, every friend, everybody I know, they just moved to the States. Or, you know, they've been in the States and they don't know much English. I just tell them, you know, if you want to get up there, you want to grow in this country, you need to learn English.
Juan Pena, we have to take a short break. Please stay with us of New Life Furniture in Des Moines, one of our guests this hour. Tell us your story. Are you a Latino in Iowa? And what struggles have you faced? Challenges have there been? What things have you celebrated? 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Back in just a few minutes. And we're back with The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. All this week, you've surely noticed that we've been hearing what it's like being Latino in Iowa from Iowa Public Radio's Rob Dillard. Well, today we're topping off that series with a discussion about Latinos in Iowa, about specifically the pull many Latinos feel between that need to assimilate into American culture, Iowa culture, and the desire at the same time to hold on to their heritage. It's no secret that in this land of immigrants, each of the succeeding generations tends to get to absorb more of their adopted culture. So we're reaching out to you this hour to have you tell us, what do you think the growing Latino population has added to the experience of living in Iowa? How have Latinos changed your community? Tell us your story, 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Joining us for the rest of the hour, we have Joanne Mackey, the Executive Director of Latino Resources. That's in Des Moines. Also Juan Pena, a first-generation Latino immigrant first to California, now many years in Iowa, owner-operator of New Life Furniture in Des Moines. Perhaps you heard the piece this morning by Rob Dillard about the Charros, Mexican cowboys. He is one of those. And Mark Gray joining us as well, director of the Iowa Center for Immigrant Leadership and Integration at the University of Northern Iowa. Nancy Gardner, principal of West Liberty Elementary School. That's a school with the only dual language program in the state. They're graduating their first class that went all the way through from kindergarten through graduation with dual language in that school, a district where more than half the population is Latino. And Juan Pena, I want to go back to you in our Des Moines studio to talk a little bit more on the personal side as a parent. How have you felt watching your daughter grow up in the United States, inevitably become more Americanized? What have you noticed about her that's American and that's perhaps very much different than the way you grew up in Mexico?
Well, yeah, I like the way she's been growing because she's been taking the best of both cultures. She's really proud to be Mexican American. She can read in English and Spanish, and we even helping her with that to keep that really growing and using that tool.
Is it a struggle to keep speaking Spanish at home? Does the English sneak in there?
It does, but I think we've been doing a lot of working with that. And like her grandma, it's at home, which, she doesn't speak English. She has to speak Spanish at home. So that's one of the other tools for our kids, to keep the grandma home. And that's the other thing, we're really family-oriented. We always keep the family together no matter what. Mm. And, that's... because she helped us with all kind of stuff at home, and again, with my daughter, she can speak perfectly Spanish and read, and of course English. She goes to here in Des Moines to Central Campus, so she's taking advantage of both worlds, and we helping her to keep the old culture and teaching her like we have her quinceañera last summer. And it's a really big a teen in our culture. It's I think every Latino girl looks forward to have that.
Mm-hmm. Joanne Mackey, you're a Latina, a third generation. You mentioned in our first half hour when Juan is talking about family and how much they are centered on the family. When we look past skin color, past language, don't we see their Latino culture really matching up with Midwestern, with Iowa culture in terms of common values and the emphasis on family?
Absolutely. Years ago, I used to work for the Division of Latino Affairs, and I used to travel to the areas, Liberty and Denison, that we mentioned before. And I used to see people that were arriving, and to me, it is incredible the changes that I'm seeing, seeing the generations moving into professional positions in companies that are our sponsors. A lot of people do not know that a lot of these companies, large companies, recruit from South America for people that are very skilled. Pioneer is a perfect example. They've got a huge Latino network of very skilled people, and that's not aware. Brian Williams had a report this last week about the astonishing growth of the Latino population in the United States, and he stated that today one person out of every six in the U.S. is of Latino origin. That's pretty incredible. He mentioned the Hispanic purchasing power of the numbers that it's reached, and he's also talked about follow up of the immigration leadership in political areas, and so yeah, we're going to see a big, huge change in some years to come. Very short years to come.
We've heard Juan's story about as a businessman, also as a father. What have you heard from other Latino parents watching their children adapting to the U.S. culture, some common struggles or maybe an incident or something you can share?
No doubt the majority of Latinos' family structure is the strongest and the most valued. I have heard, though, a gentleman told me once, he said that he wanted to go home. And I said, why? And he said, I don't like what's happening to my daughter. He said, I don't like the way she dresses anymore. I don't like the way she talks to us. And he said, I just don't like that. And mm-hmm. So, yeah, you do hear of a kid's I don't like the word assimilate, but you do see him changing to,
Yeah. Juan Pena, let me throw that over to you. Have you mm-hmm. seen with you have a son as well as a daughter, the mm-hmm. things that they pick up that you just assume they didn't, whether that's clothing or something else? Is
Well, yeah, you see, you know, some the way they dress up. But I think, again, everything starts in the family. They see, in, you know, it's like one time I was talking to my son and you know, and I just tell him, you know, I cannot be with you 24/7. So just think about what you're doing. You know what's right, what's wrong, and just do what you think is right, you know. And I think that starts at home. If you don't have who's supporting you as a kid at home, I think, you know, in every culture, it's the results are the same.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Mark Gray is the director of the Iowa Center for Immigrant Leadership and Integration at UNI. When you hear about this sort of intergenerational, these tensions between the first generation immigrants of Latinos and their children, what springs to mind the difference that age makes when it comes to fitting into a new culture, for sure?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's very safe to say that our Latino populations in Iowa are still very much in transition. And then there are a number of factors that go into that, of course, the migration patterns, where people are coming from. But, of course, you have to remember that this is a very young population. The Latino population in Iowa, the median age for the Latino population is about 15 or 16 years younger than the white population. And we know that a great deal of the growth in that population, of course, is due to births in Latino families. And so you have a lot more of those younger Latino kids who are actually, if not born in Iowa or the United States, but certainly are growing up here and going to school here. And, you know, it's a lot of the work that we've been doing with institutions like the schools is to keep in mind that this is a big leap for these families. And Juan and Joanne, of course, rightly point out that they tend to maintain and value very highly the extended family networks. But there's a lot of tension in there built in when you have a family with the parents may have very little education. They may not speak English, or they're on their way to learning English, to raising children in an American school where they are learning English and they're learning American behaviors. They're hanging out with American kids. And a lot of those kids, of course, particularly they're born in the United States, are frankly destined toward very different kinds of pressures and futures than their parents faced. So, you know, it's understandable that within, you know, that kind of generation, you have the language issues, you have the cultural issues, you have the educational differences, that you're going to have some built-in tension.
Mm-hmm. Nancy Gardner is principal of West Liberty Elementary School with the majority Latino population there in the West Liberty School District. Do you get to observe, I imagine, firsthand these tensions between parents and kids about how to act, behavior, clothing, and so forth, right there in the school?
Right. You're absolutely right, Ben. And we do recognize that family is such an important component with our Latino families. And we never put the child in the parent role as translator because that just kind of makes the balance, it creates an uneven balance between who is actually the parent in the family situation. So we always provide translators, and we always work with parents so that they understand, you know, how the school works and what's going on with their child's education, never putting the child in the role as being a translator. We've also created a parent organization for our Latino parents so that it's all conducted in Spanish, and so we we talk about those things that might be confusing to parents who are new to Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Well, do you have an example of what that might be for a new family?
Sure. There was one time at a meeting that we presented just the organization of a school district. What is a board of education? How are they selected to be on the board of education? What does a superintendent do? What's the chain of command? Where do you go if you have a concern? And it was something very beneficial. And so just providing that information to help the parents have an understanding of schools here in Iowa was very helpful.
Do you identify also a tension between the immigrant children and the non-immigrant children? Are there things there that arise, misunderstandings?
No. You know, honestly, I've been in my position here as principal in 13 years, and I have never dealt with that. The friendships are strong between the kids. Everything we do, you know, is programming, everything just very well integrated between all the students, all the families, and working very well together.
Juan Pena, I want to ask you, as a first-generation immigrant to the United States, living here in Iowa, how much prejudice, negative feelings do you think are out there towards immigrants such as yourself? Do you experience? What have you experienced that's perhaps not so nice?
Well, I think a lot of times you feel shy to do things, because a lot of times the language barrier, it's there, and you don't understand the system. So, but I think it's once you get to know the system, and like I say earlier, you know, I mean, you see a lot of potential which you don't see, and you know, unfortunately, in our countries.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like an outsider here in Iowa?
No.
That's great.
No, I really don't. Probably at some time in California, I did at the beginning because, you know, I mean, yes, you know, I'm from this little town in Mexico.
Yeah.
And you came, you know, I came to L.A., which is, excuse me, it's a huge city. I mean, it's just really...
What prevents you from feeling like an outsider? The fact that now, in the meantime, there are over 150,000 Latinos in Iowa. You have your own communities.
Yeah, because you go out, and you know, as Latino, we have every excuse to celebrate. So you know, we have reunions and stuff, and I mean, you see people from hometown, from different states, from Mexico. So you don't feel like, you know, alone. You know, you feel like you can socialize with people and have fun, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's at first when you move to the States, even, you know, you go to the little town or big cities, I think it's the same feeling because you just come to a total different world, total different system, culture, language. It's really shocking. But I think, well, you know, you take it little by little and if you learn English, I think it's a really, really big tool to grow in this country.
And we want to wind up our hour continue to talk about this. But first, let's go to the phones. Martha is joining us from Riverside, listening to our conversation. What comes to mind for you, Martha?
Hi. I have questions about the correct or most respectful terminology between Latino, Hispanic, and Mexican.
Mm. Okay.
And I would just like to say I was in Muscatine in a grocery store a few years ago, and I didn't see this young man's T-shirt very well, but it said something to the effect of, call us Mexican, not Latino, and I wished I would have gotten a better look at it.
Okay, yeah, clear up our ignorance, Martha, those that share that. Joanne Mackey, can you tackle that one? Hispanic, Latino, Mexican, is the proper terminology?
Of course, Mexican are people from Mexico.
Right.
And Hispanic was actually created by our U.S. Census. President Lyndon B. Johnson time. And they used the word Hispanic for as a category. But I think for overall, it's more correct to use Latino.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And Mark Gray, we have just a few minutes left. What haven't we included that your center tackles here in terms of the immigrants, Latino immigrants?
Well, I think the other thing to keep in mind is the tremendous diversification within the Latino community.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we tend, you know, as outsiders, we tend to think that as one large homogeneous community. But, you know, it's an extraordinarily diverse community in terms of cultural orientation, in terms of language. We have a lot of Latinos in the state for whom Spanish is not the first language. We have great, tremendous diversity in terms of geographic origin, religious orientation, and so forth. And so even though, we try to make some generalizations for some of these populations, they're extraordinarily diverse group.
When we look at this population, Latino population as a whole, though, and compare them with previous waves of immigrants to the United States, we talk about perhaps Asians or going further back, Irish, Danish, mm-hmm. Germans. Are there things that set apart this Latino immigrant wave?
Well, one thing that we do know is that this wave of immigrants is learning English faster than any other previous wave of immigrants in United States history. Instead of taking a few generations to really acculturate and have English as a dominant language, we're seeing a very steady transition towards active bilingualism in homes, and we're actually starting to see a great deal of English dominance in Latino homes as well, largely as a result of the fact that, of course, their kids are growing up here, they're going to schools like Nancy's and so forth. So, and that's all transitioning relatively quickly.
Mm-hmm. Juan Pena, how often do you get back to where you grew up in Mexico?
About two times a year, one time depends, but let's say about once a year.
How are you observed by the people who still live there as someone who immigrated to the United States? Are you seen as somewhat of an outsider in the place you grew up?
No. I mean, I feel very welcome every time I I'm there, and they just see, they're happy to see us when we go back because it's a good economic, we spend money over there and, do all this as, visit family. So it's a good, I guess they see us too as an economic, how do you say it? I don't know. It's, something to help the economy, the local mm-hmm. economy.
How do you describe Iowa to those in Mexico, relatives, friends that you still have contact with, as being unique in the United States, as different than the rest of the United States? How do you describe Iowa?
Iowa, well, I describe it as really we have the four seasons and and weather, and it's very cold and winter, but it's a very growing state, and it's something in some way similar to Mexico, because you see a lot of farming, ranchers, horses, and because we're really attached to horses and back in in Mexico.
As we heard in that piece from Rob Dillard that featured you there with the horses.
Right.
Nancy Gardner, before we go, I want to ask you about this dual language program. Will that be used in other school districts in Iowa or others? I imagine there's a great deal of interest in this type of program.
Well, there certainly is. And I wanted to note that both Sioux City and Marshalltown actually have existing dual language programs. So it's been great to network with them to kind of learn together. We were the first to start in Iowa, but Marshalltown and Sioux City quickly came on board. And we've had a lot of other districts come and visit and look to see if it's possible to have a program such that we have in their school districts. And we're more than willing to help get this model out there in other districts.
Nancy Gardner, I want to thank you this hour for being with us, and we wish you continued success as the principal of West Liberty Elementary School with your dual language program. And congratulations to your first graduates who've made it the entire way through.
Well, thank you. We're very proud of them. Thank you.
Okay. Nancy Gardner, thank you. Juan Pena, thank you very much. Owner-operator of New Life Furniture in Des Moines. You played a large role in our look at being Latino in Iowa this week. Juan, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me here.
And Joanne Mackey, Executive Director of Latino Resources. That's an umbrella organization for the Iowa Latino Heritage Festival in Des Moines. Joanne?
Thank you. And I may I
quickly, yes.
Yes. Can I invite the whole state to come to our festival this year? We always look for new vendors and exhibitors. And
okay. Do you have an online address people can go to?
Yes. Our website is www.latinoheritagefestival.org.
And Mark Gray, thank you so much for your expertise, Director of the Iowa Center for Immigrant Leadership and Integration at the University of Northern Iowa. Thank you so much.
My pleasure. Have a great weekend.
All right. We go out with a little music to suit our show today. And The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer. In Des Moines, we had help from John Pemble. The executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. He helped us with technical support on this show as well. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Contact us anytime, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.